Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Join us for an in-depth look at Iowa agriculture. Here's your host, Riley Smith.
Welcome to this week's edition of Weekend Ag Matters. I'm Riley Smith. Russ Parker and Dustin Huffman will join us later on in the show. As for right now, let's start with a quick look at the news headlines. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association on Wednesday condemned the Meat and Poultry Special Investigator Act of 2022, which was approved by the House Agriculture Committee. NCBA Vice President of Government Affairs Ethan Lane says the legislation was rushed through the legislative process without consideration of the confusing bureaucratic mess it would create. The special investigator bill would create a new position in the Department of Agriculture with prosecutorial and subpoena power. And on Monday, President Biden nominated Iowa native Alexis Taylor for the role of Undersecretary of Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs at USDA. Currently the director of the Oregon Department of Agriculture, Taylor previously worked on trade issues at USDA and on agricultural issues for former Iowa Congressman Leonard Boswell. Taylor has served as a policy expert on ag issues for several members of Congress on Capitol Hill and managed the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Farm and Foreign Agricultural Services. That's all the time we have for news headlines this week. We'll go ahead and kick it over to Russ Parker with his faith-based food for thought here on Weekend Ag Matters.
A couple of years ago, my neighbor and I went to a farm auction just north of Buxton. The highlight of the auction was a collection of vintage John Deere tractors. And since these were COVID times, the auction would be conducted online, but on-site inspection prior to the event had lots of folks driving to the farm to inspect and gather intel to support their possible bids. My neighbor wasn't so much interested in the tractors, although we did take a look at one or two, but rather a set of tractor rims, and I was interested in a John Deere running gear. We thoroughly inspected our potential purchases, formulated our top bids, and awaited for auction day. If there had been any way to grease my computer to make sure I got the highest bid, I sure would have looked for a zert fitting on my laptop. So auction day arrived, and I entered an advanced bid on running gear. I was in the classic salesman's dream mode, fear of loss, and the adrenaline was pumping. Time came for the lot number to be sold, and sure enough, in came a higher bid. Quickly, I raised the bid, and after a few moments, but it seemed like an eternity, I had won the item. Let me regress for a moment to describe the item I was bidding on. The running gear had four tires. I won't say they were good tires, but had four tires, and they all held air. And that was a good thing. I could roll it home. Tongue was straight as well as the frame, and parts of the green and the John Deere logo were still visible. And that was it. No support beams, no deck. In its current condition, it wouldn't carry anything. So now, as the proud new owner of an old running gear, it would be a work in progress and would require new beams for support underneath and a new deck to carry a load. The parallel to my life is uncanny as I consider that old running gear. Over time, people have made the effort to lay a good foundation and helped me build a quote-unquote deck to carry the load. Thank you, Lord, for putting master builders and your presence in my life. Food for thought, I hope. This is Russ Parker. Have a blessed day.
Thanks, Russ. That's it for segment one on this week's episode. Coming up after this short break, Dustin chats with Iowa Ag Secretary Mike Nagg. This is Weekend Ag Matters.
This is Money Minutes, tips from the financial experts at AgriFinancial. And joining me is Gene Charvel, Regional Sales Officer with AgriFinancial. And this month we have been focusing on financing Morton buildings. And Gene, there are a number of ways to finance a Morton building. What's the most popular?
Most of the financing that we provide for Morton's farm-related buildings is lease financing.
But AgriFinancial can offer more than just a lease, right?
For some, they like the idea of having a loan. And so we've been able to finance Morton buildings using both leases or loans, depending on what the needs of the customer are.
And you can arrange the financing without a mortgage being involved.
We can go in and provide a building lease on the new Morton building and not require a mortgage or disturb a mortgage that may already be in place.
Gene Charvel with AgriFinancial. For more information, visit cgb-agfi.com. This has been Money Minute from AgriFinancial.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's your host, Dustin Hoffman.
Well, it's time to sit down for our monthly chat with Iowa Agriculture Secretary Mike Nagy here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Secretary, thanks so much for joining us today.
It's great to talk again this month.
Well, it's hard to believe that we're in the middle of May, and we would have thought by now we'd be talking about the fact that we'd be done planting.
Right.
And we're really not. I mean, we've seen some good progress, and we're waiting for the crop progress report to come out this week as we speak. But we're not where we want to be this time of year, are we?
No, and we're always careful. I never really like to look at just last year's progress compared to this year. But when you look at the five-year average, we are definitely behind. I mean, we're a couple of weeks behind on corn and soybean planting progress. I do think that last week we made significant progress really all across the state. I mean, there were pockets of rain here and there, but we really had, I think, finally that wide open window to really run. So I expect the numbers of both corn and beans to jump pretty significantly this week.
And so what did you see up there at the Nag homestead? How are you coming there?
We've made good progress. All the corn is in the ground. And as we record this, we really should be on the final stages of getting those beans drilled. And so we had a nice window that opens. Remember, we're never the first to start nor the first to finish. So there's been others that have been done in our neighborhood. But I tell you, as I went back and forth between Central Iowa and Northwest Iowa, certainly saw a lot of progress. Now there's more work to be done, to be sure. But again, I'm really hopeful that the next 7 to 10 days will really give us a chance to put a bow on this planting season.
Now, for those who are still in that situation, that holding pattern of they're not right where they want to be, obviously we know insurance dates aren't for, you know, until next month.
Right.
But, you know, are they thinking about pushing the panic button yet, especially when we're looking at a forecast that's going to include some rain?
Well, I think folks are definitely anxious, and we know that. But here's the good news. And once we go, once folks can get in and get an open window, boy, the acres can really can pile up. So I know that folks are really working hard, working through the night. And I'm hopeful that we won't even have to think about those prevent plant timelines, that really in the next week to 10 days that we will get this thing largely in the ground.
Now, of course, something else to think about. And again, we're talking about a, you know, big what if, but obviously there are dates and deadlines for us to be doing our herbicide and our weed control programs. How does that get affected? Let's go worst case scenario. How does that get affected if we can't get in the ground on time?
Well, and that's this. Look, this is why it's so important for us to have many tools at our disposal, many tools in the toolbox, so that every year is going to be different. Every year has got weather challenges that folks have to deal with. And so in this particular year, it's been cold and it's been wet and it's been late. But there's years where it's becomes hot and dry quickly. And so, look, the reality is farmers need many tools, many options. You know, this year, obviously, for the first time, we're going to have that June 20 cutoff for dicamba applications. Again, I would not expect that to be extended at all. It's the reality of that product and how it gets used. And so, again, having more options at your disposal, it's important that EPA continue to use science and use a predictable regulatory process to get these products on the market and keep them there. I'm very concerned about what's been happening in the courts with activists attacking some of these products, because again, well, all it does is it ties the hands of producers really in Iowa, but all across the country.
Another thing that we're going to be talking about, and I'm surprised we don't have a banner behind you there of how many days without a case of HPAI, but you know, in the scheme of things, since we last talked, there has been quite a diminish. Now, there has been a few here and there, but at least here within our borders, it seems like things have quieted down. And I want to knock on wood if I can. And, you know, hopefully that'll stay the case right now.
You mean that backdrop is not real hardwood? I'm a little shocked, Dustin. Maybe you should knock on the desk. But Look, it's true that we haven't had a commercial site go positive since the end of April. And then we had a backyard flock in Bremer County at the beginning of May. And the trend is good. We're on the right side of this. I think, you know, hopefully that we know that there's still a risk that we could have additional infected premises, but the trend line is in the right direction. I think we are on the backside. There's a lot of cleanup and a lot of work still going on those sites. And of course, ultimately, we want to get these producers cleared and back open for business as quickly as we can. Unfortunately, though, we have seen that as you go further north and west from Iowa, you are continuing to see additional cases. And again, that's evidence that this virus really is carried by those migratory birds as they fly north. So, you know, I think the good news is that we're still we're on the right side of this. Though, I would really encourage folks stay vigilant, keep biosecurity top of mind. It's important all the time, but certainly as we finish up the spring here, I want to remind folks to keep that top of mind.
And of course, when we look back on this in a year or so, we're going to obviously analyze, was it worse than 2015 or was it just that we were more prepared? And if we look at it from that standpoint, I mean, how much of this was lessons learned the hard way the last time we went around that we're able to learn for this time?
Absolutely. And we will learn things. We already know that there's things that we've learned in this outbreak, and we're keeping notes of those as we go along. But we will do a look back, so to speak, after this incident is completely done. We did learn lessons, as you say, the hard way. We went through it in 15. 15 still ranks as the largest foreign animal disease outbreak in U.S. history. It does not appear that this outbreak will eclipse that one. So I think it will remain number one. We learned that we had to act quicker to detect and then act quicker to depopulate and then effectively clean and disinfect and dispose of all the material on that site. Those were lessons that learned and the hard work paid off. But I would tell you, credit to the producers. We had a lot of movement from farm to farm, lateral movement back in 2015. We have not seen that in this outbreak. Largely, it has been independent wild bird introductions. And that tells me that producers have really done, not that they've got biosecurity plans, but that they are implementing them every single day. And that is hard work. And it's a testament, again, that we're seeing the benefits of the hard work over the last couple of years.
So let's remind everybody, you know, I made mention of, you know, having a countdown there, but it's coming down to a 30-day countdown every time there is a discovery. And it's been a little bit. Remind our viewers here exactly what's going on with the policy that IDALS has in place right now.
Right. In an effort to control the spread, we prohibited or put a temporary prohibition on live bird exhibitions, you know, shows certainly like you think of at the county fair or the state fair. And we said that we would not allow those until 30 days have passed since the last infected site was announced. So again, we're talking early May was when the last infected premise was announced. That started a 30-day clock. And so, yes, as we flip the calendar into June, if we have no additional cases, we will once again allow those shows, which is good news. I'm hopeful that we'll still be able to have some poultry shows at county fairs this year. But time will tell. But we are clicking our way through the days here, and I'm really hopeful that we'll be able to lift that prohibition.
You know, and as we get ready to wrap up here today, Secretary, obviously we talk about planning delays. We talk about, you know, foreign animal diseases. We talk about a lot of times about the stresses we have. But there's one thing we need to talk about is obviously May being Mental Health Awareness Month. And agriculture is someone that is an industry that definitely has its fair share of problems sometimes with being overwhelmed and talking about the resources that are available for help. And also sometimes getting out of that stigma that it's okay to ask for help. I mean, what kind of things are you helping to promote there from IDAL standpoint?
Well, that's such an important point. Look, in agriculture, we have to deal with so many uncertainties and things that you can't control, right? You control what you can. You try to manage the risk around what you can't. But who can foresee the weather, or who can foresee the market challenges, or flat out things that happen in our lives? And so I think the most important thing, as you say, on the whole, removing the stigma around asking for help. It's okay to ask for help. We all need it time to time in our lives. And farmers are famously independent folks. But look, it's okay sometimes to say, look, I've got a financial question, or I'm not feeling so well, or I've got a health issue, or I just need to talk to somebody, and talk to somebody who understands ag issues and what's happening on the farm. We have a great project I'm really proud of. We secured some funding from National Institutes for Food and Agriculture through USDA. And then we subcontracted that with Iowa State University Extension, because of course they know how to do outreach to folks out in the field. And so, you know, look for resources coming your way from county extension offices, or seek out information through Iowa State Extension. And of course, we've got the Iowa Concerns Hotline, which has been around since the 1980s to address all kinds of issues that might challenge farmers or ag businesses. And I would always encourage folks to know that that resource is available regardless of what you might be going through.
And it's just as important for the people around the others that see these changes, that see things maybe aren't right, to know it's okay to intervene maybe on their behalf and talk to them and just say, hey, are things going okay? And that could be someone beyond the family. That could be someone at the elevator, the grocery right. store, clergy person, anybody.
It is. And that's one of the other components of this project that we're doing with Iowa State, is to train folks, not to be a counselor or not to be the one actually doing the responding, but to flat out just to recognize that somebody might be in crisis, or to recognize that somebody might need a referral. I've gone through the training myself. We've had a lot of our team have gone through it, because of course we're on farms. We're interacting with farmers and ag businesses. And so even just the ability to know and to recognize some of the signs of stress and of crisis and be able to help connect the dots, that is a very important thing too. So that training is going on. And of course, I would encourage anybody who works with farmers on a regular basis to think about getting this training yourself, or maybe for your teams to do it. Again, how can we help people get to the right resources?
All right. Well, Secretary, lots of great conversation again this month. And of course, we're getting closer to the state fair, so we'll be looking forward to seeing you there. We'll probably see you at the World Pork Expo next month as well. Lots of things going on as we get into summer, but we thank you for taking the time to visit with us here again today.
Always great to visit. And I'm so looking forward to the return of the World Pork Expo, the county fair season, and of course, the granddaddy of them all, heading to the Iowa State Fair in August. It's going to be a busy summer, but stay safe out there, everybody, as we get this crop finished up.
All right, that's Iowa Ag Secretary Mike Nagg here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. May is Beef Month in Iowa and across the country. Iowa ranks fourth in the nation in the number of cattle and calves on feed, over 890,000 head and 19,200 operations. Cattle in Iowa account for 30,000 jobs and almost $7 billion to the state's economy. Beef is also healthy for you. 1 3-ounce serving has 25 grams of protein and 10 grams of total fat. And contrary to claims by environmentalists, cattle actually help in carbon sequestration. So the next time you enjoy a burger or steak, thank an Iowa beef producer. This message from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's Riley Smith.
Well, we all know it's tough to market really any product, but recently it's been even more difficult for beef producers, having to compete especially with the big four companies. Now, what are Iowa politicians doing to keep this as a level playing field for Iowa beef producers? And for that, we go to Congressman Randy Feenstra. First off, Congressman, how are you doing today?
Hey, it's a wonderful day, and it's a great day. We're seeing a lot of production happening today, a lot of corn being planted. So that's always a good day.
Exactly. And it's great that weather has finally been able to cooperate a bit to let us do that. So let's start off today just talking about the Cattle Price Discovery and Transparency Act, just a little bit about what's included in it, and then also what you have put in this new update that's going through.
Absolutely. I tell you what, so the bottom line is we're trying to hold our big four meat packers accountable for the price fixing schemes. And this really affects the Iowa and Minnesota region. I mean, we have declining number of participants in the negotiated cash markets. So we put together this bill, and we modified it over time. But between Senator Grassley, Representative Cindy Ashney, and myself, we created this to help our farmers and our independent producers. The big things in this bill is it's a bipartisan legislation that requires the Secretary of Agriculture to establish minimum levels of fed cattle purchases made through approved pricing mechanisms. and ensuring that multiple buyers and sellers can regularly make and accept bids. It also sets a penalty for the Packers if they don't do this. And then the other big thing is it creates a public library, which we've all been talking about, of marketing contracts, mandating boxed beef reporting, and to ensure transparency and requiring Packers to report the number of cattle scheduled to be delivered for slaughter each day and 14 days moving forward. So to me, this is a very common sense approach, trying to get everybody on a level playing field and creating transparency. And that's what all the producers are really asking for in Iowa, Minnesota, and other places in the country.
And let's talk a little bit about that struggle that we've seen from the big four packing plants and the average beef producer. You know, obviously, it's very difficult to compete with anybody in general, but when you're going from a small average Iowa farmer against a huge multi-million dollar company, I mean, it's a huge struggle and they just can't do the same things.
That is correct, especially when you talk about vertical integration and you're not seeing the cash contracts anymore because the Packers aren't going down that path. And we're seeing that obviously down in Texas and Oklahoma and stuff like that. And that's where we get in a pinch in Iowa and Minnesota because we do a lot with cash contracts. And that's why we have to change because we're on the outside looking in and we've got to change and create more transparency. And that's what this bill does. You know, it still sets a minimum threshold for a region at 50% when it comes to mandates for each region. I think that's very fair.
Right. And let's talk, you know, you mentioned it's a bipartisan effort. And it's great to see things like that, especially for the state of Iowa, because an issue like beef production and making that fair playing field is by nature just not a partisan issue. It's for all of us and we're all in it together.
Absolutely. And it's not only bipartisan. I mean, we have Democrats and Republicans on both sides. I mean, fairly even bill. But we also are seeing the administration saying, hey, we got to do something. And I just really applaud Senator Grassley. He's been at this for 5 years now, trying to get something done. And it seems like finally we're going to get something come to fruition here as both the House and the Senate look to start going down the path of passing this bill in the next several weeks.
Right. And let's talk as well, you know, from the viewpoint of the average Iowa beef producer, what benefits should they expect to see from this, you know, assuming it goes through all the way and goes into full written effect?
Well, for the regular producer, it just opens the mechanism to see transparency, to see what others are getting around the country, you know, for their bids. And what to me, it just creates a level playing field for each producer. And at the end of the day, I think for producers, it will increase bids. You know, the bottom line is we just want fairness in the system and we want to hold Packers accountable. And that's what this bill is doing. I mean, it really is saying, Packers, we want to see what you're doing and how this is playing out and making sure that everything's fair in all sectors. I know we're in Sector 5 with Minnesota and Iowa. But there's other areas that, you know, do it quite differently than what we do. And we want a seat at the table and be treated fairly like the rest of the country.
Right. And with that level playing field comes the opportunity that Iowa beef producers really need to get after is to go after and market your cattle and get those beef prices. Of course, you know, we're making those prices apparent and easier to see than ever. Now it's important to go out there, market your cattle, and make sure you're getting the best price that you possibly can.
You hit it on the head. That's the bottom line. All right. You got to market your cattle and have the opportunity to get a fair price. And you know, not under the cloak of darkness that we're seeing some vertical integration with the Packers and stuff like that. We're not there in Iowa and Minnesota. You know what? We still do the cash market, cash contract, and we want to keep it that way. I mean, our smaller livestock producers, this is what we've done over the past, and then we want to keep it going and doing it, but we want to be treated fairly.
Right. And are there any other details of this bill or other efforts to support Iowa cattle farmers that we should go over today?
Well, we're always watching very closely, especially when it comes to tax structures like stepped up in basis, like-kind exchange, capital gains issues and stuff like that. I mean, there's always different ways where the federal government steps in and tries to take profits. You know, the other side, obviously, is the input costs that we're really fighting right now. But, the farmers are resilient and we'll figure this out. But we don't want the impediment of government, when it comes to the tax structures that penalize us.
Of course, and you know, obviously we thank you for what you've done for the beef producers, Congressman Feenstra, but still, you're not clairvoyant, so what's the best way for Iowa beef producers to make their voices heard to you so that you can represent them in the best way
possible? Absolutely. I mean, you know what? The great thing about beef producers, they're passionate about their field, about what they want done, and we have to be very active. And being active means that, you know, if we can get online and look at the Ag Committee and send an email to the different Ag Committee people, especially those that might be in Kansas, those that might be in Texas, and say, hey, this is a fair bill. This is a very good bill. It's transparent. And boy, if they could do that, that'd be wonderful.
All right, Congressman Feenstra, if people want to get a hold of you specifically and, you know, get in contact and maybe, you know, make their voices heard, how could they do that?
You betcha. So it's Feenstra at house.gov. So it's Feenstra.house.gov. They can get a hold of me.
All right, Congressman Feenstra, it was great talking to you today. And, you know, thanks again for all you're doing for Iowa farmers.
Yeah, thank you. Great to have you on. And hopefully we get this all worked out.
And that's it for today's episode of Weekend Ag Matters. Thanks again for tuning in. You can listen to this episode and more by going to the podcast tab on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network website at iowaagnet.com. For Russ Parker and Dustin Huffman, I'm Riley Smith, wishing you a great rest of your weekend. Join us again next week for more Weekend Ag Matters.